Tonight, dangerous tornadoes tearing through the South as millions brace for another night of severe weather. At least 8 reported twisters touching down in Texas and Oklahoma. High winds, heavy rain triggering massive floods, igniting power line explosions. Nearly 50 million people under alert tonight into tomorrow. We'll bring you the latest track. COVID's new surge, a troubling rise in cases reported across the country now. Infections up more than 50%. The CDC now projecting hospitalizations and deaths will rise too. This as the U.S. marks 1 million lives lost since the start of the pandemic. How much higher could that number climb? Market turmoil, the Dow plummeting more than 1,000 points, marking its worst day in 2 years. Sharp losses wiping away a surprisingly strong day yesterday after the Fed announced an interest rate hike. So what is fueling this Wall Street whiplash? Accusations of abuse, explosive new testimony from Amber Heard, the shocking violence the actress alleges she suffered at the hands of ex-husband Johnny Depp, and Heard's relationship with an A-list co-star that she says sent Depp into a jealous rage. Murder mystery, a New Hampshire couple vanishing while out for a walk, their remains found days later, putting their tight-knit community on edge. What police are now begging residents to send in to help them track down the killer. And emergency exit arrest, alarming video from inside a United Airlines flight. The door wide open as the plane sits on the tarmac. What the stunned passengers witnessed just moments before. Top story starts right now. Good evening. I'm Kate Snow in for Tom Yamas tonight as we come on the air. Severe weather alerts in place for 12 million Americans. This unrelenting tornado season taking yet another swing at an already battered South. Overnight, at least 8 twisters reportedly touching down. This massive funnel cloud spotted near the highway in Ford County, Texas. High winds and rain triggering power line explosions. This truck here swerving out of the way to avoid sparks. At least 40,000 customers without power across the region. That dangerous system bringing torrential downpours to Fayetteville, Arkansas. Residents forced to evacuate, wading through flooded parking lots. Amazingly, no one killed in the latest round of storms. But the threat isn't over yet. Bill Cairns has the forecast for you in just a moment. But we begin tonight with Morgan Chesky from Inside the Storm Zone.
Look at it. Here we go.
Just missing that house over there.
Tonight, a tornado outbreak slamming the South.
Twins! We got twins! Twins on the ground! Look at that!
8 reported tornadoes touching down over the last 24 hours across Texas and Oklahoma.
We are right in there, baby.
In a devastating onslaught, severe weather reported every single day so far this month. Seminole, Oklahoma, already hit hard by a twister on Monday, suffering through a second battle with Mother Nature's fury.
It's heartbreaking to see something that you've been around most of your life, it just seems like, and just watch it all be gone in a heartbeat.
A confirmed tornado marching through the city at 20 miles per hour, ripping the steeple off this church and destroying several structures, including the Academy of Seminole School, which sustained a direct hit while people sheltered inside.
My husband and my teenage son held the door shut while the tornado came through it.
One teacher recounting the harrowing moments her family and another employee huddled in the school's vault, realizing the door wouldn't close.
Took everything they had to keep it shut. My little boys were screaming. It was definitely scary.
Those high winds also causing explosions along power lines, forcing drivers to swerve off the road and causing thousands to lose power. In Texas, multiple reported tornadoes made for dangerous conditions late Wednesday. The small town of Lockett bearing the brunt of the devastation. The twister struck at night, tearing through buildings and tossing trees on top of homes. Perhaps the scariest moment, when the tornado turned on a storm-chasing tour bus, blasting out its windows and spinning it around, with 6 people inside.
This is probably where we were,
but it's up other
and then it completely spun us around.
Miraculously, the only injury was to a man's arm. Everyone able to walk away, knowing how close they came to potential tragedy.
And Morgan Chesky joins me now from Dallas. So, Morgan, it's incredible. We saw this earlier this week. There were no tornado-caused deaths. You spoke to the operator of that tour bus. By the way, I didn't realize there were tour buses for tornadoes. Any updates on everyone, how they're doing?
Yeah, Kate, I spoke to that gentleman earlier today. He was the one who injured his arm when that tornado struck, blasting out all of those windows. He says, aside from some minor cuts, he is okay. And those five others inside, the majority of them tourists from Australia, also doing okay. In fact, they were able to drive that vehicle to a nearby town to get much needed repairs. As for today, though, Kate, there is still a threat of severe weather. In fact, just within the last few hours, another reported twister hit East Texas. We are told that there have been two reported injuries at an RV park, and the threat of severe weather isn't over yet. Kate.
All right, Morgan, thank you for watching it all for us. Those tornadoes, as he said, they're not letting up. So we have more watches issued down south heading into tomorrow. NBC News meteorologist Bill Kerins joins me now with how all this is timing out. I have to say that tour bus is probably not a great idea, right?
They got caught in a bad position. They were to the north of the tornado, and you're never supposed to approach a tornado from the north side. And the storm chasing community is analyzing it, and there were mistakes that were made. Let's just put it that way. Where we sit now, we had a tornado outbreak Monday in Oklahoma. We had a tornado outbreak yesterday, and then it's amazing. We didn't have any fatalities or any injuries in both of those outbreaks. I mean, that was just mind-boggling. Typically, you get these big tornadoes, so maybe the advice is getting out there, the word is getting out there, and people are taking heed and getting to safety and safe areas, because we did have some stores that did significant damage. So today, we had that one tornado that did damage the RV park. We know we had a couple injuries there. This was in East Texas. That tornado watch, though, has been dropped right now, so we have no tornado watches. Right now, we have two severe thunderstorm watches that go up to Nashville and the Greenville, Mississippi. So the tornado threat is diminishing throughout the rest of this evening. If we get any more in the way of severe storms, likely central areas of Louisiana, back in the northern Mississippi, and then we'll take it through areas of central Tennessee. Tomorrow, the shift is through the southeast. More of a wind damage and hail threat than tornadoes. We'll get maybe a couple isolated tornadoes, but hopefully none of the big ones that are typically the most deadly. But we have 38 million people. We're taking it all the way from New Orleans in the morning up to Huntsville, then through the Appalachians, Atlanta, it looks like about mid-afternoon for you, and then Charlotte and Raleigh heading up to Richmond as we go throughout the late afternoon. Best chance of tornadoes tomorrow from Montgomery, Alabama, into areas of south-central Georgia. And the other areas that we've been watching is we had a flash flood emergency in Oklahoma last night. We've got water all over the place in Arkansas, numerous flash flood warnings out there. That threat is diminishing. And then, unfortunately, it's not going to be severe weather, but if you have Friday and Saturday plans in the Mid-Atlantic from New York to D.C., it looks pretty ugly, including Mother's Day in the Mid-Atlantic region. A little better in northern portions of New York, but it's not going to be a pretty scene.
Yeah, I'm not loving that forecast, Bill. Thank you. Thank you, though, for watching all of it so closely. Busy time of year. We're going to turn now to the troubling trend of growing COVID cases across the country. Once again, the numbers heading in the wrong direction as contagious subvariants fuel the spread. Gabe Gutierrez has the latest.
Tonight, a new Omicron subvariant is fueling another COVID surge across much of the U.S. In Maine, an elementary school has shifted to remote learning after 30% of its students and staff got sick.
It's frustrating because I thought we had kind of come out of the woods on this.
Now, the CDC forecasts COVID hospitalizations and deaths will rise over the next 4 weeks. That comes as the COVID death toll in the U.S. climbs above 1 million.
That number is devastating.
Dr. Umesh Gidwani runs the cardiac ICU at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. The state's COVID hospitalizations just topped 2,000 for the first time since February. California has seen its rate of new COVID cases increase nearly 70% in the past 2 weeks. And in Seattle, a Carnival cruise ship docked this week after passengers say more than 100 people were infected.
They were overwhelmed.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has tested positive just days after attending the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
The nation's most distinguished super spreader event.
That event is now facing growing scrutiny as more guests test positive, including several staffers from NBC News. The dinner mandated proof of vaccination and a same-day negative test, though other social events in D.C. that weekend may have had more lenient requirements. The president of the White House Correspondents Association says our event implemented protocols that went beyond any guidance or regulation issued by the CDC or the D.C. Health Department.
And Gabe Gutierrez joins us now. So, Gabe, the World Health Organization also revising its estimates of how many people have died from COVID-19?
Yeah, that's right, Kate. The WHO now estimates that nearly 15 million people died from COVID around the world. That's roughly three times the official figure. And the WHO looked at excess deaths, basically looking at how many people died in 2020 and 2021 and comparing that to how many people would have died in normal times. Now, this new estimate really draws attention to the staggering toll of this pandemic and how many countries underreported victims. Kate.
Gabe, thank you. And for more on this latest COVID surge, I want to bring in NBC News medical contributor, Dr. Natalie Azar. Nice to see you. So first of all, it's been about, what, 2.5 weeks since the mask mandates went away on transportation, on airplanes. Is that linked to what we're seeing?
Yes. And, you know, it really shouldn't surprise anybody, least of all our viewers, as we've been talking about for the last 2 years. Remember what this virus is doing. It is mutating in order to have a survival advantage. That means that every new variant that we're seeing has become more and more contagious. So as soon as you strip away that layer of protection, Kate, you are just making anyone who hasn't been vaccinated or hasn't recently been infected, let's say, you're making them more susceptible to infection. And that's really what
even people who have been vaccinated are getting it.
Absolutely.
I have friends who've gotten it. I want to ask about the severity, though, because, you know, while Gabe just went through a lot of very negative indicators, it seems like death is not rising at the same level, luckily, as it has with other variants. Am I right about that?
Well, right. And I mean, at this point, it's always too soon to say whether or not a new variant is going to be more severe than the one before it. But again, to the virus's advantage, it doesn't want to become more virulent. It doesn't want to kill the person it infects because it's going to die off with that person. So what we have been seeing is that we are seeing transmissibility increase, but we're not seeing that commensurate rise in deaths. We are seeing, however, just because of sheer numbers, we are seeing people being hospitalized. I think the 7-day average of hospitalizations has been going up in this country, but deaths have been going down. But I think it's always important for everyone to understand that in that chain of infection, inevitably, someone is going to be hospitalized in all likelihood. And there will be people who are still absolutely dying. We still have over 350 deaths per day, which far exceeds influenza deaths per year, I must remind everybody.
Yeah. So given that, we're headed into summer. Everybody, I think most people want to be carefree this summer. They don't want to be wearing masks outdoors and at parties. What are we headed for? And are we tempting fate if we just live like we did before,
like
COVID?
Pre-everything. You know, look, heading into the summer, you know, if you're living in the U.S., heading into summer, you can feel pretty good about things. We have a tremendous amount of immunity in the population now with a combination of prior infection plus vaccination. People will be outdoors. I want to reiterate, we have a lot of protection from recent infection. That Omicron surge in the wintertime, you know, obviously devastating for hospitals and people who lost their lives, but it did give us a lot of immunity and protection against these you know, sublineages of Omicron in the weeks and months to come. I think most of us are probably more concerned again about what's going to happen in the fall, but I think we can kind of ease into the summer with a usual sense of caution and being careful about things. I would say, you know, if you have to keep a tab on what's going on in the community, as levels are rising, right, from low to medium to high, be aware of those things. Consider masking indoors, you know, in public places, especially if you're over 3 months out from having had infection. And if you're 3 to 6 months out from your last booster, you are susceptible to getting reinfected. We still maintain that you're protected against severe disease, but we're going to see this cycle of infection, you know, over and over again. That's what endemicity ultimately is going to look like.
Dr. Natalie Azar, thanks. Always good to have you. Now to the other major headline tonight, stock market turmoil. One day after the Fed announced its biggest interest rate hike in decades, Wall Street wiping out all of yesterday's gains and more. The Dow dropping more than 1,000 points, more than 3%. The NASDAQ down 600 points, nearly 5% there. And the S&P 500 dropping nearly 4%. CNBC anchor Brian Sullivan joins us now. Brian, the market responded so positively yesterday when they raised the interest rate a little bit. What happened today? Why this big sell-off?
Well, I think the market reacted yesterday positively because of what the Fed said, but it's in a downtrending market anyway, Kate. So you have these relief rallies, as they call them on Wall Street, that'll come in from time to time. The reality is the whole year has been very difficult for the equity market. So we'll kind of push aside yesterday. There's a very real concern ultimately about the impact of inflation on the economy and the consumer. Kate, you and your viewers know that the price of pretty much everything is higher. And now interest rates are rising again. You may not care about the Federal Reserve. You may not care about the bond market. I get it. But you probably care about the interest rate on your home loan, your auto loan, or your credit card. And all of those are going to go up, even at the same time that people are paying more for things at the grocery store, for hotel rooms and airfares. So the market is reacting and being really worried about a consumer-led slowdown in the months and maybe quarters ahead.
And the Fed did this for a reason. Do you think, are you hearing from Wall Street investors that they're confident that the Federal Reserve's plan to combat inflation is going to work?
No. Most people are not that confident because the job that the Federal Reserve has got to do, thread this perfect needle, if you will, Kate, between overdoing it to crush inflation but sending us into a recession, or not doing enough, which means that inflation continues to rise. Effectively, what the Federal Reserve is trying to do is the plane coming in for a landing, hits the runway, apply the right amount of pressure. You want to stop in the most comfortable way you can. They're trying to slow the economy down but not slam the brakes on. It is very difficult to do, and all the signs that we are seeing in the stock market and the bond market and some other wonky Wall Street factors are saying that the Fed is probably not likely to pull it off without also sending us into a recession, possibly by the middle of next year.
Well, that's not a great way to end. Brian, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Tonight, a new report saying U.S. intelligence helped Ukraine sink the Russian flagship Moskva, one of Putin's most embarrassing setbacks of this war so far. And in Mariupol, attacks continue on the steel plant where hundreds of civilians may be still hiding, some even fearing that Russia will use Mariupol as a stage to declare victory by next week. Kelly Kobieya is on the ground with the emotional stories of those who fled.
Tonight, NBC News reports U.S. intelligence shared with Ukraine helped lead to Ukraine's sinking of the Russian cruiser Moskva, one of the most embarrassing setbacks Russia has faced since the start of the war. The news coming on the heels of a New York Times report that says the U.S. has given Ukraine real-time battlefield intelligence that American officials said led to the killings of Russian generals. NBC News has previously reported that the U.S. does share intelligence, but the Pentagon today denied targeting generals.
We do not provide intelligence on the location of senior military leaders on the battlefield.
In Ukraine tonight, the Mariupol steel plant facing assault, artillery exploding and smoke rising, seen in this video shared by the Ukrainian National Guard. A Ukrainian commander saying they're under attack from the air and ground. We're fighting heavy, bloody battles, he says. Hundreds are believed to still be hiding under that plant, many of them women and children. After about 100 were evacuated on Sunday, including Tatiana Trotsak, who was hiding underground for 2 months. I'm terribly worried about the civilians and wounded soldiers still there, she says. An advisor to President Zelensky claimed today the Russians want to declare victory in Mariupol by May 9th, when Russia celebrates its defeat of the Nazis in World War II, though Russia denies the claim. Tonight, as the battle rages for Mariupol's steel plant, those who fled wait and hope. Anna is 6 months pregnant. I wanted my child to be born in Mariupol, she says. We bought an apartment. We were fixing it up. We just never thought we'd be in this situation. Now, she says, it's hard to see a way back. And tonight, the White House announced First Lady Jill Biden will be traveling to Eastern Europe and will meet with aid workers and refugees on Sunday, Mother's Day, on Slovakia's border with Ukraine. Kate?
Kelly Kobieya, thank you so much. Tonight, with Roe versus Wade in jeopardy after the leak of that Supreme Court opinion this week, some state lawmakers are scrambling to enact more abortion restrictions, while Democrats in Congress announcing an effort to protect abortion rights. NBC's Blaine Alexander has the latest.
Lillian Newton is a patient advocate at Hope Medical Group for Women in Shreveport, Louisiana, a position she pursued after going there as a patient.
I don't know if I would have made it through an unplanned pregnancy managing my mental health.
If Roe v. Wade is overturned, abortions in Louisiana, legal up to 20 weeks, would be immediately outlawed. And yesterday, the state legislature advanced a bill that would charge mothers and providers with homicide. Bradley Pierce, president of the Foundation to Abolish Abortion, helped write that bill and says his organization is working with at least a dozen other states on anti-abortion legislation.
We believe that abortion is cruel, and it's the taking of an innocent life, and that's we should make that illegal. And there shouldn't be some exception for mothers.
As Americans await the fate of Roe v. Wade, today the Senate's top Democrat announced a last-ditch effort to protect abortion rights.
Next week, the U.S. Senate is going to vote on legislation to codify a woman's right to seek an abortion into federal law.
The measure is largely expected to fail, which is why some states are taking action. Today, Connecticut's governor signed a law to expand abortion access and protect medical providers and patients, including women from out of state. And some states are placing focus on abortion pills that can be administered by providers or through the mail. They're FDA approved for up to 10 weeks in a non-medical setting.
I definitely think that we will see medication abortions increase. That may be easier in some cases than coordinating a visit at a time where a clinic has availability.
Legal experts say that paves a difficult path for states on both sides of the issue.
You'll see states in conflict with each other. You'll see states in conflict with the federal government. You won't see an end to court battles.
For now, Americans are watching the Supreme Court for a final decision. Blaine Alexander, NBC News.
We thank Blaine for that report. There are 13 states in the U.S. with those trigger laws that would effectively ban abortion almost immediately once Roe v. Wade were overturned. Last December, I spoke with Sarah Hader, a nurse from Red River Women's Clinic in North Dakota, one of those trigger law states. She told me about what the overturning of Roe would mean for her and the clinic. Here's some of what she had to say.
How high are the stakes for you?
Unbelievably high. The reason why I do this work is I believe strongly that women deserve to make their own choices. And if women are not allowed to do that, they become second-class citizens.
Sarah joins me now live. Sarah, I will never forget that moment. You got so emotional talking about what if. Now it's real. How are you feeling now?
Well, that watching that clip, it definitely makes things real. I mean, it's been a surreal couple of days. Yeah. It took me about 20 seconds after getting the news to vomit. And yeah, providers are not okay.
When I spoke with you last December, I remember you told me that the clinic would have to close within 30 days if Roe versus Wade were overturned. Are there preparations being put in place right now in that event?
Well, as part of the medical staff, I am not really privy to the details of that, but I can tell you that we are doing everything that we can to continue to provide abortion care to women in the tri-state area, and we will do everything for the moment, and we will do everything we can to continue.
Can you explain to those who don't live in a state that has a trigger law, what would happen in North Dakota if the Supreme Court puts out this decision? What would happen?
Well, the North Dakota Attorney General would have to act, and that would give us a lot more direction and information. But the basics of the trigger law are that the clinic would have to be lights out in 30 days.
So absolutely no abortions allowed anywhere in the state at that point?
According to the basic information that we have, of course, once if Roe does fall and the Attorney General does do what he needs to do, then we will have, like I said, more information about the specifics. But yeah, yes.
And Sarah, when we did that interview, you shared some personal details. I hope you don't mind me repeating what was on nightly news back then, which you grew up attending demonstrations against abortion rights. And then you got an abortion yourself and ended up working at that very clinic where you'd had the abortion. So this is such a personal issue for you, and you've been on both sides of it. Can you see a path forward in this country where we're not completely divided over this?
I guess I always have hope. But when the other side believes that the life that I have is not worthy enough, and that the thing that is growing inside of me, it has more rights than I do, I don't know how you can compromise with that.
Sarah, it's so nice of you to be with us again live. I really appreciate it. I know how emotional this is for you. Thanks for sharing your thoughts tonight.
Of course. Thank you.
Sarah Hayter with us. We're going to take a turn when we come back. The shocking new allegations of abuse in the Johnny Depp defamation trial. Amber Heard testifying for a second straight day. The tearful moments from the stand and the explosive accusations leveled against her ex-husband. Plus the major opioid settlement. Why Walgreens was just ordered to pay $683 million. And the tarmac scare in Chicago. The emergency exit door ripped open. Who police have now taken into custody? Top story is just getting started. For the second day, Amber Heard taking the stand, the actress getting emotional and graphic as she described what she says were incidents of abuse and assault by her ex-husband, Johnny Depp, allegations that he denies. Maggie Vespa has the latest. We do want to warn you, though, this report contains a disturbing description of sexual assault.
I'm sorry. I mean, I couldn't breathe.
Please. Tearful allegations of violent abuse for a second straight day. Actress Amber Heard at times stopping to catch her breath, testifying in the $50 million defamation trial, a suit brought by her ex-husband Johnny Depp, who she said repeatedly told her about their marriage.
Only way out of this is death. Only way out of this is death.
Heard told the jury Depp would often abuse her while drunk and high. Here, breaking down, testifying Depp violently sexually assaulted her while on a trip to Australia in 2015. Depp, she said, had ripped off her clothes and had her up against a bar, assaulting her with a bottle.
I'm looking at him in his eyes, and I don't see him anymore. I don't see him anymore. It wasn't him. It was black. I've never been so scared of my life. It was black. I couldn't see him. I just saw his arm. I could feel his arm moving, and it looked like he was punching me. But I could just feel this pressure.
That story marking an especially graphic day in court. Depp denies the allegations, his lawyers calling witnesses to the stand earlier in the trial, the house manager saying this.
Do you recall observing any injuries on Ms. Heard?
No, none whatsoever.
Did you notice anything unusual about her physically at all?
No, she was obviously crying a lot, she had red eyes and, but no, otherwise no.
Depp himself testified that on that Australia trip, Heard threw a bottle of vodka at him, injuring his finger.
And then I looked down and realized that the tip of my finger had been severed.
This morning, Heard addressed photos of Depp in which he appears unconscious. The actress testifying she took these 2013 photos in the Bahamas, L.A., and Tokyo to document Depp passing out after using drugs and alcohol. Later, she spoke about Depp being jealous of her co-star, James Franco, and she testified Depp slapped and kicked her on board a private plane in front of his staff, something Depp denies.
My back is turned to him, and I feel this boot in my back. He just kicked me in the back. I thought to myself, I don't know what to do. I can't believe he just kicked me. No one said anything. No one did anything.
Depp is suing Heard for her 2018 op-ed in the Washington Post, in which she described herself as a public figure representing domestic abuse. Depp's lawyers argue the article, which never names Depp, damaged his image and crippled his career, costing him millions. Heard, who is countersuing for $100 million, says she and Depp had heated, violent arguments, but denies abusing Depp. Tonight, a jury searching for the truth amid years of allegations and pain.
Maggie Vespa joins us now live from Los Angeles. Maggie, such a difficult day to even watch that testimony. I understand at the end of the day, Amber Heard's lawyers introduced some photos into evidence as well.
Yeah, Kate, that's right. They showed the jury actually a series of photos depicting what they say is proof of abuse toward Heard by Depp. These are some of them. Heard talking through each one as her lawyer showed them. And then tonight, Depp's team releasing a statement on today's testimony, writing, quote, "Miss Heard did indeed deliver the performance of her life," in their words, in her direct examination. While Ms. Heard's stories have continued to grow new and convenient details, Mr. Depp's recollections have remained exactly the same. That's their statement there. And they also pointed to the upcoming cross-examination expected to start May 16th. Kate.
All right, Maggie, thank you. For more legal analysis on the latest in this case, let's bring in MSNBC legal analyst Kristen Gibbons-Fedden. She's with me now. Kristen, Amber Heard, graphic detail. We didn't play most of what she said today about the alleged abuse at the hands of Johnny Depp. How important is that going to be to this case and that jury?
I think it's going to be really important. You know, Ms. Heard, I thought, came off very credibly. She was very detailed. She gave a vivid account not only of what she experienced, but also what she felt and what she saw of the man that she, the day before, had talked about how they met and began a relationship, that she, you know, loved him. But I think one of the things that's really important here is that this is a defamation case. And what we are hearing a lot about are criminal details of assault both on both sides. But for a defamation case, Johnny Depp has to prove that she published a lie about him with malice because he is a public figure. What we hear Amber doing is putting forth her defense, putting forth that, in fact, there was abuse and she had every right in the world to write this article.
And you just mentioned this is a legal case on defamation, but it is shining a really high profile light on domestic abuse. How do you think this might impact future legal battles or how people see domestic assault?
I think this shines a really big light on many facets, because we have a lot of people who are kind of pro Johnny Depp and we have a lot of people who are pro Amber Heard. But reality is what we see here, regardless of who you believe, is that men can be victims too. And again, that's whoever you believe. But number two, the cycle of violence truly exists. And it truly, either both sides have described how they were perpetrated against, they were assaulted, they were threatened, they were physically, verbally, and mentally abused, and yet they obviously experienced intense psychological trauma because then they went back to the person that they alleged perpetrated against them. And that cycle of violence is real. When I was the captain of domestic violence over in the prosecutor's office, we saw this consistently, and I think it's really important that society sees it as well.
Yeah. If you were Johnny Depp's attorney at this point, given what happened today, what do you do? How do you, you mentioned trying to prove defamation. How do you try to do that?
I think one of the things is, and this kind of comes from their statement, but what they're going to try to do is, Amber gave very vivid, specific details about what happened to her. What they're going to do on cross-examination is try to shake her up, show her to be a liar, show there to be inconsistencies in any prior statements that she gave. Keep in mind, she testified in the UK tribunal. She also probably gave numerous deposition statements, and many of her statements could be inconsistent with some of the text messages. So they're going to try to counterbalance that, but it's going to be difficult with those pictures. And again, I just found her testimony to be very credible and very emotional, things that even an actress can't fake.
Kristen Gibbons-Fedden, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it. Coming up, police still searching for suspects in a smoke shop shootout in California. We've got dramatic video of that up next. Back now with Top Stories News Feed, and we begin tonight with a United Airlines passenger under arrest for opening an emergency exit and sliding down the wing of a plane. You can see the door wide open in this video from someone inside. It happened this morning in Chicago as the plane was taxiing toward its gate. United says ground crews stopped the person outside the aircraft and that other passengers deplaned safely. Police in LA County releasing video of a smoke shop shootout. A warning, this video is violent. This failed robbery happened in Compton last month. You can see suspects opening fire on the employee, the worker firing back. Officials say he was shot in the face and neck, but he did survive. One suspect died, another was arrested. The sheriff's office says they're still looking for two more suspects. President Biden today named Karine Jean-Pierre as the next White House press secretary. She's currently principal deputy press secretary. She will be replacing Jen Psaki starting May 13th. Jean-Pierre's breaking barriers with this new job, becoming the first Black White House press secretary and first person who's openly gay in that position. And Walgreens reaching a $683 million settlement with Florida in a lawsuit accusing the company of making the opioid crisis there worse. That money is set to be paid over 18 years. Most of it will go toward efforts to tackle substance use disorder and overdoses. Walgreens admitted no wrongdoing in the settlement. Up next tonight, a heartbreaking interview with the mother of former Miss USA, Chesley Crist, who died by suicide earlier this year. Her mother speaking out for the first time since her death on Red Table Talk, sharing her daughter's last words to her, which included, "I don't want to leave." Priscilla Thompson has more.
Never thought I would be here.
4 months after her daughter's devastating death, the mother of Miss USA, Chesley Crist, speaking out for the first time about that fateful day.
When I looked at my phone, I noticed there was a text message from her. I think at that point I near blacked out. Because by the time I read the text, an hour had passed.
In shock and unable to read the rest of the message, Chesley's mother, April, says she and her husband called police and boarded a flight to New York City. While on the tarmac, they got a call confirming their worst fear.
Authorities are investigating the tragic death of a pageant star. Police telling NBC News the cause of death is believed to be suicide.
April appeared on Facebook Watch's Red Table Talk, sharing her daughter's final message to her.
I love you, Mom. And you are my best friend and the person I've lived for years.
The words Chesley wrote, an agonizing glimpse into what her mom describes as a struggle with chronic, high-functioning depression.
I don't want to leave, but I genuinely feel like I have to if I want to escape my loneliness that feels like it has no end. I fought against depression for a long time, but it's won this time around.
Chesley's mother sharing that this was her 30-year-old daughter's second attempt at taking her own life and how the two had grown closer since the first.
I wanted her to feel comfortable calling me. Yeah. If ever you're in crisis, call me.
Right.
And she began taking all the right steps. Yeah. She began seeing a counselor.
It seems like she was doing everything right, but still, it wasn't enough.
She was doing a Herculean task to keep herself well. For every individual, we still have to tweak and make modifications to make sure that the plan that's in place is actually working.
And Chesley's story, not uncommon. Nearly 1 in 5 chronically depressed people have attempted suicide, studies show. Her mother's interview airing just days after the world learned of another tragic loss.
Legendary singer Naomi Judd has died. Her daughters, Winona and Ashley, telling the AP they lost their mother to the disease of mental illness.
I'm sorry that she couldn't hang on until today.
Naomi Judd had been outspoken about her long-term battle with depression, opening up to NBC's Savannah Guthrie in 2017.
I realized I wasn't just sadness, like if you have the loss of someone, the loss of a pet, the loss of a job, whatever. You can go into a temporary depression, but this lasted forever.
Depression isn't an isolated incident. Often it's an ongoing battle. And so as a friend or a loved one, how do you support someone in their moments of crisis, but also in the day-to-day of it?
When those stressful things happen, those folks have to check in even more because that person may be struggling
and less likely to reach out for help.
Dr. Rita Walker studies suicide. She says one solution is to work together to find something that person in crisis can do until you're able to get in touch, like calling a suicide hotline, listening to a favorite playlist, or writing their thoughts on paper.
So that there is some shared understanding about what's going to fill the gap.
Chesley's mom now finding consolation in the words her daughter left behind.
I would read some sentences and then I just would collapse. But after I really absorbed it, I became thankful.
Yeah.
Thankful that I had her for 30 incredible years.
Priscilla joins me now in studio. It's so tough to hear all of this. And I know that one of the issues that often gets raised is families feeling guilty after someone is lost, wondering what they could have done differently. I've experienced that myself, having talked publicly about losing someone in my family. You talk to experts about what family members can do to kind of alleviate that or to move forward.
Yeah, and Kate, it's something I've experienced personally as well. My younger sister died by suicide, and the doctor that I spoke to today really emphasized the importance of not just focusing on the loss, but on the life. And so instead of focusing on what you could have done differently and why this happened, think about the memories that you shared with that person and the time that you had with them, and also how they would want you to remember them and celebrate them. And if you really find yourself struggling, it's important to talk to a professional about that grief.
I'm so glad that we're having these conversations out loud. Yeah. Priscilla, I'm sorry for your loss too. If you or somebody you know is considering harming themselves, please know that there is help available. You can call that number on the screen, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. It's 1-800-273-TALK, or you can text TALK to 741-741. Time now for Top Stories Global Watch. We begin with a deadly stabbing attack in Israel. Medics saying at least three people were killed in what police suspect was a Palestinian attack. Several others were hurt. It happened in a city near Tel Aviv as Israelis were celebrating Independence Day. Officials set up roadblocks after the suspects got away. Next, to a dust storm hitting Iraq, sending thousands to the hospital struggling to breathe, thick smoke suspending flights for hours. Look at that. And making visibility difficult, obviously, for drivers in Baghdad. Officials there urging people to stay inside. Dust storms are becoming more common there. Experts are blaming that on climate change and water mismanagement. And an investigation is underway in Paris, where police say armed robbers targeted a Chanel jewelry store today. This video appearing to show suspects dressed in all black and escaping on motorcycles in broad daylight. No one was hurt, and how much money they stole has not been made public. Staying overseas, and to the case of Brittany Griner, the WNBA star held in Russia for nearly 3 months now. The State Department determining that she's been wrongfully detained, but critics and activists saying her case and those of others imprisoned abroad are not getting the attention they deserve. NBC's Zinkley Asamoah has the story.
Brittany Griner is a two-time Olympic gold medalist, three-time All-American basketball player, and she's been in Russian detention for nearly 3 months. Now the U.S. State Department says she's wrongfully detained, a change in her case classification.
We're going to continue to undertake efforts to provide appropriate support to her.
Among the efforts, new supervision over Griner's case, now overseen by a State Department office focused on hostage release, along with Bill Richardson, the former U.S. ambassador to the U.N. who helped free a journalist detained in Myanmar. All this comes less than a week after former Marine Trevor Reed was released in a U.S.-Russia prisoner exchange.
Brittany Griner was classified as wrongfully detained. And it took our son a year to get that classification, even though the government knew all the facts.
On Wednesday in front of the White House, Reed's family spoke out during a Bring Our Families Home campaign rally.
We're so glad that it only took them a short time to classify Ms. Griner as wrongfully detained. That should be the fact anytime you're dealing with a country that is an adversarial.
The family of Paul Whelan also joined. He's still detained in Russia on espionage charges he denies, along with Griner. Griner, who played for a Russian team off-season, was recorded here at an airport outside of Moscow in February. Russian officials allege Griner carried illegal vape cartridges with cannabis oil. Since being detained, many say Griner, an LGBTQ+ black woman, hasn't received the same attention as her white imprisoned counterparts, some writing online, "Free Brittany Griner." The WNBA continues to pay her full salary, and this season, all 12 WNBA courts will hang Griner's initials and jersey number.
We know she's safe, but we want to get her home.
And it's important to add that this change in classification for Brittney Griner's case did not just happen, but was the outcome of a lot of work from advocates and members of Congress. That includes Democratic Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, who's also from Griner's hometown of Houston, all of them calling for Brittney to come home safely.
Zinclay Asamoah for us. Thank you. Still to come, a New Hampshire community on edge. They're searching for answers tonight after a couple was killed on an afternoon walk. What police want people to send to them next. We're back with a mysterious double homicide in New Hampshire. A couple found fatally shot on a popular hiking trail, but neighbors say they didn't hear any gunshots. Now police are offering a $5,000 reward for any information that can lead them to those responsible. NBC's Issa Gutierrez has more.
Tonight, a murder mystery in the New Hampshire woods.
It's just shocking that something could happen like that. You don't expect that up here.
A new reward offered in the hunt for whoever killed this beloved couple while they were on an afternoon walk together last month.
Anyone who saw the Reeds that Monday afternoon, anyone walking on those trails, anyone who has any information related to their disappearance or deaths are asked to contact the Concord Police Department.
On Monday, April 18th, officials say Stephen and just Wendy Reed left their home in Concord, New Hampshire around 2:30 p.m. to go on a walk, leading them here to the popular Broken Ground Trails. When Stephen didn't show up for a planned event 2 days later, family members reported them missing to police, setting off an investigation that by Thursday was a hunt for a killer. Police discovering the couple's bodies with fatal gunshot wounds in a wooded area by the Marsh Loop Trail.
It's a little bit concerning that it happens right in your backyard.
In this case, you have local police, state officials, the Attorney General's office, the FBI involved. You've had over 100 tips. Why is this case such a mystery?
I think if I look at my calendar, still within the first 3 weeks of this case.
The New Hampshire Attorney General's office now asking for any information that could lead them to the arrest of the person or people responsible for the horrific murder.
How common is something like this, a double homicide in this area?
It's certainly not something that happens often in Concord. In New Hampshire, we average about 19 homicides a year.
Ward urging the public to help, asking for dash cam video from nearby roads or accounts from folks who were on the trails around April 18th.
Police had mentioned that they believed that this was a one-time instance.
We have no specific information that would lead us to believe that the public in general is in any danger as a result of this incident. And that, nevertheless, it's certainly a horrific act, and we're encouraging the public to remain vigilant.
Complicating the mystery, neighbors who live nearby say they didn't hear any gunshots.
Strange. This is a very peaceful neighborhood. And I mean, when they're talking about murder, I never lock my doors. I think I'm going to lock them tonight.
Issa Gutierrez, NBC News.
Coming up, one woman's gift to her mother-in-law that is making this Mother's Day all the more special. Stay with us. Finally tonight, we bring you the heartwarming story of a daughter-in-law and the life-saving gift that she gave to make this Mother's Day one the family will cherish.
Even if they're not related by blood, mother and daughter-in-law, Elizabeth and Karen Risk, have always shared a special bond.
I just think that we both fell in love with each other because she loved my son, I love my son. As long as my son's happy, I'm just loveless.
But about a decade after her son married Elizabeth, Karen received a startling diagnosis in 2019. Doctors told her she had polycystic kidney disease.
I just said, God, you've got to help me.
Karen was placed on the transplant list, but the clock was ticking.
We really realized that she was on the list and that she was going to need a kidney sooner than later.
One of the things that I tell my patients that are getting close to 70 is that you may be a candidate currently, but we don't know what's going to happen in the next couple of years.
Because polycystic kidney disease is passed on through families, many of her genetically related family members weren't eligible to donate.
My siblings have siblings that have polycystic kidneys. They're not able to donate.
But one member of the family could donate, and she didn't think twice about giving her kidney.
I love her, obviously, first and foremost. But secondly, I really want my children to have a grandma.
just remember that when I transplanted her, thinking, wow, she must be a really nice person if her daughter-in-law is donating a kidney.
That transplant, a success.
I'm doing very well. I just got my blood work yesterday. Fantastic. I'm happy.
The pair hopes their story inspires others to consider organ donation.
I want people to realize that you never know who could be your recipient. And you never know who could be your donor. People are always curious about, you know, you gave your mother-in-law a kidney? And I'm like, well, you know, she's not a normal mother-in-law. She's probably the best one out there. I won the jackpot.
Organ donation is so important. Happy Mother's Day to all. Thanks for watching Top Story. I'm Kate Snow in New York. Stay right there. More news now on the way.